Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go leadership team.
Yeah, we are a leadership team here.
That's right.
Leading the content makers. We got together and we said we should talk about the end of this horrible season. But it's a winning season. It's a winning season.
Right. So it's not completely horrible.
Yeah.
The masks at the end, the horror that was the 2023 San Diego Padres.
Well, a big part of our leadership team is also with us. Dallas McLaughlin's here.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Probably one of my favorite Padres seasons I can remember. I mean, what just a joy.
The resilience in September.
It was one of those seasons where I just love it when everyone blames everyone. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much fun. Yeah. Like, back in the Klesko Nevin days, nobody blamed anybody. They just knew they were going to be bad. You know, like, it was fun when they're bad and they actually have to point fingers. Like, it's just it's more enjoyable.
In the Klevin and Nevin days, I blamed my parents for everything.
I blamed Al Martin. There's no reason to do that. I did it.
Yeah. Well, hey, we have a very special guest. He's the first time on the Kept Faith Podcast. Please welcome Dylan from Letters to AJ, the Substack that's taking over Padres Twitter. How's it going, Dylan?
It's going good. It was an interesting season. Uh-huh. I think that was the recurring theme. It might be the worst winning season in the team's history, at least that we can recall.
Yeah.
No, remember that one season where they went 82 and was it 82 and 80 or is it 81 and 81? It was like the worst record to get into the playoffs and they got swept by the Cardinals immediately. I feel like that season was worse than this one only because literally everyone was like, you have no reason to be here. This team should not be here. It was like everyone just shitting all over the Padres for no reason.
You know, and as we saw just, what was it like 4 sweeps in the wild card series, there was a little piece of me that thought at least that's not the Padres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was over fast. 2 days without baseball we're looking at now. So that's
yeah. I mean, it was weird. I looked at those scores today. I didn't even really pay attention to who got into the wild card race. I just knew it wasn't us. So I stopped kind of looking. And then I remember looking yesterday and then looking today and going, oh, it's over. It's over now. Like, that's kind of ridiculous. Kind of makes me really glad that the Padres didn't get in. We would have just been ousted immediately by the Diamondbacks.
They were winning some games at the end there where the wins were pissing me off, you know, because it's just like you guys are getting closer to, you're making it so close, but we know it's not going to happen. And it was upsetting when they're just stomping the White Sox, you know. It's just infuriating at the same time. Yeah.
And it was such a vision of what they could be that you're like, why didn't you just do this all year long? Like, we knew you could do this. You're showing us you can do this, but it's at completely the wrong time to be doing this.
I have an answer. I'm actually going to write it. Nick, I have something to tell you.
What?
I started writing something for thekeptfaith.com.
A blog?
I wouldn't say it's a blog. I wouldn't say it's a blog, Nick. I would say it's a post that might be too long, but it's going to talk. It's talking about what I'm about to say. The answer was Jerks and Profar. And for anyone to, for everyone to ignore this, or the people who see it go, all those people saying it was Jerks and Profar are stupid. Hey guys, guess what? You are stupid. Because if you were to just back up, get off your little baseball, you know, reference, your little baseball almanac horse, put down the immaculate grid for 2 seconds, and just look at what happened. We weren't great. Jerks and Profar came back. We were freaking incredible. We were the team we were when he was here last year. It is silly to think that these intangibles don't matter. I know people hate it when they matter. I know that people hate it when baseball players are happy they play better. Why can't they just play better when they're sad? They're millionaires. I get it. You've never done anything important in your life and you don't know how it works. I understand. Okay. But Jerks and Profar was the game changer. He was the reason it worked. Because we didn't have those guys all season long. We didn't have anybody like that. And then what happened? We got Gary Sanchez, who's another one of those guys. People just love Gary Sanchez. The team started to play better. And then Campy came out of nowhere and started just being the Campy we all wanted him to be. That was another boost. And then we got your Profar back. I mean, come on. It makes sense to me.
There's no evidence that says you're wrong. I mean, they did start winning.
In fact,
it's correlation is hard to deny.
Thank you. It's not hard to deny. You can't deny it.
Profar is culture.
You are what your record is with Jerickson Profar.
You're damn right.
Well, Dylan, you wrote something. You posted something today on the Substack. Dallas, you might want to think about starting one if you want to branch off from us. But
No. My one post a year.
Yeah. you wrote something today. You posted it. The post is called "So Long and Thanks for All the RISP." Yeah, the RISP. Thanks
for all the RISP.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting post about the real deep seated problems that plagued the Padres this year. I mean, you mentioned you kind of focused on the Josh Hader aspect of it, the Hader House rules, as you call it, or are people calling it that now? Is that the?
I don't think so.
Well, why don't you explain?
I like it.
The article that you were talking about, because you laid out the case for why some player, you know, this organization wasn't exactly putting, you know, players in the right position to succeed and, you know, help the team win in small ways that maybe fans don't really notice.
Yeah, I think that the story of the season, the retrospect on the season, is that things that weren't supposed to matter ended up mattering. You know, marginal decisions that just they pale in comparison to the main decision that the team has to make. They ended up mattering because, like, bad luck struck all year long. And that's the thing about marginal decisions, is they just don't matter when everything goes your way. You know, when you're the 2023 Marlins and you can, you know, have every break go your way, you're going to make the playoffs with a mediocre team. But you can do, you know, many, many, many things right, but you only control so much. And that's kind of the theme of the article, is there's some things that were marginal, but that the team probably had some control over, had some agency over, that they didn't exercise. And you know, what we kind of theorize is they didn't exercise it because it wasn't supposed to matter. But then bad luck strikes. You're not in the same position that you expected to be. Things are much closer. Your margins are much closer. You are on the margin. Suddenly your marginal decisions start to matter. And that was the part of the season that we thought was so interesting to write about all year, because, you know, the sort of the macro events, the unbelievable slumps, the loss of skill, the holes in roster construction, those are the fairly obvious, you know, reasons why the season didn't go the way that we all wanted it to. But it becomes interesting when small decisions that are really easy to overlook start to matter. And one of those was the fact that our closer was only available in a really narrow set of circumstances, and he was fantastic in those circumstances. He was awesome. But you start to wonder, if are we evaluating the actual value that the closer brings to the team appropriately, just by looking at saves, strikeouts, ERA, and not looking at the leverage of the moment that he's able to be deployed in. Mm-hmm. And so when you compare, you know, we brought up the stat win probability added, which is it's a somewhat of a nebulous stat, but it's pretty simple when it's all said and done. You look at his performance compared to a lot of really inferior relievers, but relievers that were dynamic, were available whenever their team needed. He was near the bottom of the list of the closers that got at least 30 saves and win probability added for his team. Mm-hmm. And are we at the point where we need to start looking at, you know, what's the end game? Yeah, it's part of it is you want to strike out players, you want to keep your ERA low. Ultimately, as a team, you want to accrue wins. Are we undervaluing dynamism, undervaluing being available, and overvaluing the sheer dominance that a reliever is capable of, even when you're hamstrung by having to deploy him in lower leverage situations than you'd like?
My favorite thing that you said during that whole time was you just skipped right over loss of skill. That was my favorite. You're like, all the bad things that happened this year, loss of skill. Yeah, that was a bad thing. That was a really weird bad thing. All of a sudden, dudes were just bad. It makes no sense. Well, yeah, oh my God.
And I think you're mapping out like the ways in which the organization isn't really stepping in and forcing guys to put themselves into positions where they could not achieve what they want statistically, or be able to buy into the system that way and not achieve what they want to hit statistically to make them the most valuable. Do you think that's an across the board problem you're seeing in baseball, that like strong organizations are able to get players to not adopt something like the hater rules or anything like that?
It's hard to speak really generally, but you certainly see examples of hitters changing their behavior. I think it was midway through the season, we had that loss to the Phillies. Was that right after the All-Star break, maybe? Where you had Kyle Schwarber up there, and he is not shy about taking an enormous cut with two strikes. That's kind of his brand, except he was up in the bottom half of extra innings with a runner on third and less than two outs.
Right.
When he gets the two strikes, you see him take this little slap swing just to put the ball in play. There's no chance he's hitting a home run or getting extra bases, but he's getting his team the win, and he hits a sac fly to walk off to win the game. And when you take a step back and you think about what that means for him as a player, so he's well established. He does, he's somebody who's, made his bread. He doesn't necessarily have to pursue, maximum individual success in every situation, but you see other examples of players in that situation that would take their same swing. They'd take their A swing. They try to walk it off with a home run. And I think that in some part, it's hard to say how much, but in some part, that's a cultural issue team to team.
Well, I think, I do mean to harp on the Profar thing, but like that to me is the thing that this team had been missing. It's a really great way of putting it, is there are so many guys on the Padres squad this year that needed to be the hero, that needed to always be the guy they are. And it seemed like they were never willing to really give that up, to never be a Kyle Schwarber and not care about personal success, care about team success. And I'm not saying that as like they're bad people or they don't care or whatever. I think they do care. I think they want to win. I just don't think anything was instilled in them to give up a little bit. The only guy I saw really continuing to change in one way was Soto with all the walks. I mean, he seems just committed to walking as much as he possibly can, to getting on base, and unfortunately staying on base by himself alone and never moving forward. But like I see that as a bit of a sacrifice for him. He's supposed to be this guy that just gets up and launches home runs and does the Soto shuffle and all this other stuff. And instead, he's just taking walks. I think that's a bit of a sacrifice. But you see the other guys. I mean, how many times? I like Tatis a lot, but he had a very weird season where I feel like he was just always trying to walk it off, always trying to get the big hit. I never saw a lot of adjustments coming out of Tatis. Just swing, miss, hung his head, walked off. So I do feel like that is where guys like Sanchez, where Sanchez is going to go hit a home run and that's about it. And that's what you can expect out of him. He's not trying to do anything else. Profar is going to try to get on base, do whatever he can to do that. His personal glory doesn't matter. I think there are just those guys that we didn't have this year, where we had a lot of them last year. And that is the difference maker to me. And we just didn't see it. I mean, you have four guys making over $100 million. It's just like, what are they supposed to do? Not be the millionaire superstar? It's hard.
Yeah. Well, it seems like there's not a leadership. I mean, we talked about it last podcast with Kevin Acey. It's who's the leader that's saying everybody has to buy in and make these sacrifices. And I think you quoted, it was from Dennis Lynn's article, but the quote from Soto where he's talking about it and saying that, we've all talked about it and we need to start playing to the situation and trying to play in more of like a small ball aspect of our game. But, I think it's hard for these guys because it is such an individual sport and they do have to worry about their value going into their next contract. How do you regulate that as a manager? And obviously it's proven in our situation to be very hard, even a Bob Melvin, who's somebody who's got so much experience. Yeah.
That's probably what we thought was interesting to write about, is baseball is an individual sport. And, you can use a simple heuristic that's, it's individual. Everybody's already incentivized to play their best at all times. And that is true. But there are singular moments where what's best to the individual self-interest is just slightly out of line with what's best to the organization's chance to win in that moment. And those moments are pretty rare, but you can actually identify them. And when you have a season that unfolded the way that ours did, you just start to wonder if, you know, elevating the personal rules for one player above the laser focus on winning, if it had some accidental effect of, you know, insidiously letting players feel like they could shun self-sacrifice, because there's a very salient, prominent example of that on a night-to-night basis. That's not really a question that can be answered externally, I don't think, but that's something that should be part of the introspection of the team this offseason.
Yeah.
Logically, I was going to say, if each one of the guys thinks to themselves, if I'm do what I'm supposed to do with the other talent around me, everything's just going to work out. It's almost like maybe a subconscious thing where I just need to worry about me and do my thing. And this talent, this roster is so talented that of course it will work itself out, but it didn't.
Yeah. And this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I think that at the beginning of the season, it wasn't totally unreasonable to think that that was true, to think that this roster was so talent-laden. We had such a good starting rotation. We had the best closer in baseball. We presumed we were going to have Suarez, who's an excellent setup man. And then on the field, we had exquisite defense, and we had an offense we thought was going to be fantastic. It's not totally unreasonable to think these marginal decisions just don't matter. You know, elevating a players' personal rules above winning isn't going to matter, because we're going to be good enough that it truly doesn't matter. I think going forward, that notion has been just definitively disproven, and that's the biggest takeaway from 2023. You never know when your marginal decisions are going to matter. With that in mind, it makes sense to always maximize the win probability with the things you have control over.
I mean,
yeah, go
ahead. Oh no, I was just going to say, yeah, it is like, for me, it just does go back to like, you don't have, I mean, to me, when you say marginal decisions, those marginal decisions to me are the guys that you fell out the roster with. And we just didn't, you know, we just didn't have it. And, but at the same token, we did run into the weird bad luck this season with like Nola. I mean, Nola legitimately had a condition that made him a worse baseball player. And like all of us jokingly would have guessed that, but then it turns out to be true, you know, like that is just terrible luck. You know, all of your bench players just added zero to the team. Matt Carpenter falls off a cliff. Nelson Cruz can't get anything going. Like it just like seemed like every weird decision we made, not weird decision, every decision that I think everybody was actually pretty okay with. I was pretty excited about Matt Carpenter and Nelson Cruz and, you know, like all, even Odor, I was like, yeah, why not, man? Odor could be another one of those profar guys. He could be another, just plug him in. And just every one of them just fell off a cliff and didn't seem to make a difference. And then couple that with the bad luck, couple that with Bogaerts having one of the weirder seasons he's ever had, Machado having a weird season. It seemed like to me, and I hate saying this because I was all for trading him, still thought we should have, but Juan Soto seemed to be the only guy to me that actually was kind of giving a shit this season. Like he seemed upset and angry a lot and frustrated a lot. And I also don't think Juan Soto's a leader. Like that's the other thing too. Like I don't think he's a leader. I think people assume because you're out there dancing and hitting a bunch of bombs and you're like this big dude that you're a leader. Well, why isn't he a leader? Maybe he's not a leader. Like it's okay that Juan Soto isn't a leader. Like he doesn't have to be. And to me, it's like, I think we put a lot of undue pressure on these guys and they get mad when they don't perform in the ways that we expect them to when they're not at bat. I mean, he was terrible defensively, but that's, you know, that's a whole nother story.
Well, I mean, this week, Peter Seidler sent his press release saying that they're basically going to look internally and talk, you know, with the leadership staff, and we had a press conference from AJ Preller today via Zoom. Shout out to Zoomers. He came on and you know, didn't really impress anybody. It seemed like a pretty standard AJ Preller press conference where nothing really is said and we don't really know what's going on. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they're bringing back Bob Melvin and he's going to be back. And, you know, you write a Substack that's titled Letters to AJ. I mean, what has he written back at all? Or no, but I mean, what would you say to him now going forward? Like what's the first thing that he should look at in itself when, you know, these marginal mistakes keep costing us seasons.
Yeah, I think probably the place to jump off with that discussion is the Seiler quote. Some people thought it was kind of a notorious quote where he said AJ is excellence. And I would just tell them that I think excellence is constant quality improvement. It's mm-hmm. constant introspection. It's being honest about mistakes that were made. And when you have an owner's vote mm-hmm. of confidence saying, I think you are excellent, your job is safe. What that gives you is that gives you cover to admit where you went wrong and to update your beliefs, update mm-hmm. your strategies, and try something new without fear that you're going to be seen as, you know, experimenting and your results haven't been good and your job's in jeopardy. You know, you can change. So I think, you know, that I can't remember if I brought this up in an article, but the downside of replacing underperforming executives is that forecloses on growth. And so what I tell AJ is, you know, you've been granted some clemency for this year that in a lot of ways was a disaster. It sounds like it was actually a financial disaster potentially with missing the playoffs, but you've been granted clemency here. You have a chance to grow and grow into that statement of excellence. And that means constant quality improvement, introspection, not succumbing to sunk cost fallacies, and not just saying it was nothing but luck. And to his credit, I think he was quoted as repeating that mantra that he's a subscriber to the belief that you are what your record says you are. And that's, you know, that's some modicum of accountability. That's somewhat what you want to hear when someone's been, you know, kept in place and is going to get a chance to come back and try it again next year. But what I want to remind him is, excellence is really constant quality improvement. And none of us are so sage and so wise that everything that we do and say is going to work out and be correct. But to achieve that excellence, you really have to know where you might have gone wrong, and you need to update, you need to change.
I could tell where we went wrong. We should have never traded Hosmer. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, that's the biggest mistake we made.
Well, yeah, yeah. I don't know what with the talk of the reduction of the payroll happening possibly this year, you know, what are the moves that he should do? Like, what should he do? I mean, is everybody on board with just throwing a ton of money at Juan Soto and saying, let's run this all back? I don't know. What would you do? You're going to have to replace some starting pitching and I guess a closer now. And I don't know.
You know, He did a good job in the offseason identifying that there was opportunities with Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo. They really contributed. It was limited, especially when it comes to Wacha because of injury, but he got value out of those contracts. Unfortunately, with payroll being reduced, a similar approach is going to be needed this offseason. And you have to try. You have to try to find those people that you can sign within your constraints, but that do have that chance of providing that excellent quality. That's what you need to survive the regular season gauntlet. There might be a little bit of hope coming from our farm system, and we certainly have exciting prospects. The question that's really, really hard to answer is how close are they really to contributing at the major league level? I find that just there's so much volatility with that question. We just don't know. But we have a more closer to the major leagues, you know, group of prospects than we did a year ago, in part because we emptied the cupboards for Juan Soto. But just to get back to Juan Soto, with a player like that, I feel like it's kind of hard to be totally rational. I just want him to be a Padre for life. So it's probably why I should not be in charge of the team. I'd be trying to re-sign him, and I'd probably get a little irrational in doing so.
Yeah. Dallas, are you on board? I just $460 million or whatever.
I'll tell you my unpopular opinion about this whole thing. Strap in. You're not going to, and people are going to get real mad.
Extend Profar. Yeah. Yep.
My unpopular opinion, and it's never going to happen, so it doesn't matter. Like what I'm going to say will never happen. So this is purely just if things could be all square. I think you trade Manny. I think you trade Manny, and I think you re-sign Soto. I think Soto's younger. He has a bigger upside as far as offense goes and can grow into a leader. I think Manny did a lot of weird things this season, said a lot of weird things, rubbed people the wrong way in this town, not to the point where we were running him out of town, but I think there was a lot about Manny that was shown that we hadn't had to see before because the team was doing well, or we were on the upswing or whatever it was, or it was masked by, you know, Tatis's problems. This was the first time we got things are going wrong, Manny Machado, and it did not go well. And he didn't have a great season. He had a good season. He didn't have a great season. And defensively, he's amazing. He's an amazing baseball player. I'm not going to say he's not. I'm not saying trade him because he's not good. I'm saying trade him because he is really good. And what we could possibly get back for him would fill in a lot of those gaps that we continue to talk about. I think more so than if we were to let Bogarts go, try to move Bogarts or somebody else. I think he's the only chip you have that if someone's willing to take on that contract, you could possibly get something very, very amazing back, or a package back, what something similar to what you lost for Soto. And then I just think you hold on to Soto. I think he's the younger talent with the bigger offensive upside than Machado. I think you can keep Bogarts at short. He wasn't bad at all. I don't know why all this talk. He's a very serviceable shortstop. You move Kim to third base, where Kim's shown that he can be great at third base. You know, I just think that, like, there is an upside to that argument. Will it ever happen? No. Do I actually want it to happen? Not really. But it would be, if I was in charge, it would be one of the things that I would really explore. I would really look into that possibility. Because we're going to lose Snell. We're not re-signing Snell. And now you have Musgrove, a very, very old Darvish, who did not look that great this year. You know, got hurt end of the year on the aisle. So you got a lot of concerns there. You're rotation is a concern. Your bullpen was pretty good. Suarez would be the heir apparent to the closer role, I imagine. I actually love Campy. We got Salas coming up. Like, I'm not so worried about the catcher position. So it's like, what are the holes that we're looking to fill? And it's a lot of just like you just mentioned, little holes that we need to be able to afford the right guys to fit into. And I think the only way you get away with that is you keep Soto or Manny.
You know, one thing I want to say about you bringing up Profar, I think the intention there is talking about the vibe signing, but something that Profar has in his arsenal that probably is just ever so slightly undervalued is he has positional versatility. And what really struck me about this season was how well the Dodgers offense was, despite rolling out an unbelievable number of different lineups night to night, because they clearly have an organizational philosophy that every night they want to put their guys in the best position to succeed. They're not going to let Jason Hayward hit against a left-handed pitcher. They're going to move Rosario from hitting eighth one night to batting cleanup against Rich Hill, and he's going to hit a home run. And they're constantly finding ways to extract value out of players by putting them in those positions where they can succeed that night. They platoon really, really heavily. And we, because of the nature of our roster construction, really didn't have that option. But positional versatility is something that isn't that hard to clear the market for. They basically got Rosario for free. They traded Noah Syndergaard, who is, if anything, a negative value. There's players out there that can do, you know, one thing well. They can really hit lefties, and they can play, you know, a credible third base. But you can't really extract that value unless you have that dynamic ability to change your roster day to day and still have a competent fielder at every position. But players like Profar that can competently play, not well, but can competently play multiple positions, infield, outfield, they don't cost that much to sign. And if you deploy them in the right situations, you can extract some value that goes above and beyond what they would ever be able to produce as a everyday player. And that might be one of those inefficiencies in the market to try to exploit if you're kind of hamstrung with reducing payroll.
Well, I mean, that's, you bring up the Dodgers, and that to me is a really good example of what I think you look at these teams that have just superstar after superstar. And it's like, we always think that way with the Dodgers, and it's really not true. They have Freeman and Mookie, and past that, who's the superstar that's like a legit superstar? It's like, they've never had just a roster that's a murderer's row of superstars like the Padres supposedly had this year. You have those couple of guys who are your killers, you know, and then you have a bunch of dudes who are just willing to fit in and willing to make it work. And because they're surrounded by other talent and people who are willing to do that, they score, they hit, they get their numbers. They get, you know, Max Muncy, imagine Max Muncy going to any other team being successful. You can't do it. Bellinger lucked his way into the role he's in right now. I mean, let's be honest. Nobody thought much was going to happen there. And Corey Seager just is in a perfect situation for Corey Seager. It's like they've all kind of found those roles, but Corey Seager didn't go anywhere else and then become the superstar there. You know, he's still the same guy. He's just, so it, to me, it's like, those are that's the team I want the Padres to be. And I think we have been that. I just think that this year's, for whatever reason, we got away from it, which does suck because you look at Bob Melvin, who everybody loves, and how does it all go? How does it all go wrong? How does it, and the answer is AJ. AJ is a bad, bad person.
Well, it does seem like Dave Roberts can work with the GM. You know, that's it. It does feel seamless that they can get along. And, you know, I don't know how they're generating their lineups or whatever, but it seems like a collaborative effort that the whole organization, all the way down to the lowest farm system team, you know, you've always heard about it our whole lives, the Dodgers way, you know, and I think it's the older I get, the less BS I feel towards, you know, I think it does make sense. I mean, that's the hardest thing about watching the Dodgers in this division is that they have endless amounts of money and they're smart and they do things.
look at those Yankees teams in the early 2000s and late 90s that just dominated. Everybody looks back at it now and goes, well, they just had this, you know, unbelievable lineup. And it's like, no, they didn't. They had Scott Brosius at third base. Paul O'Neill, an aging Paul O'Neill, was their outfielder. You know, Tino Martinez, somebody who most people believe was washed up. Like, it's like, you know, they filled in the blanks and then put in their couple superstars. You know, so it's like that to me is the construction I want to see. And I feel like I'm not going to get it with AJ. I mean, the first thing he did when he came to San Diego, and I'll never malign him for this because it made all of us feel relevant and important. But I mean, look at the team he put together when he came to San Diego with Upton and Kemp and Middlebrooks and, you know, this team of just, hey, these people have names, and just threw it all together. And everyone knew it was going to be a disaster. And it was. It made us excited because we had been living in hell for years and years. But like, I don't think he knows how to put together a team. I just don't think he knows how to do it. And he's never proven that he does. Last year was the closest we came. And that's because we had dudes like Jorge Alfaro contributing. This year we had, we relied on Austin Nola and whoever else was there until Campy came back. And then we got Sanchez. You know, it's like, it's just, to me, I feel like he does not have a clue as to what he's doing on the edges.
Well, we've heard talk about him taking a role where he would be the president of baseball operations, and then they would hire a GM in his place. And what do you think about that, Dylan? Is that better? Maybe just a better role for AJ, not to talk to us directly, because it doesn't always go well. I don't know. Maybe that's all it would be, but
potentially. It's really hard to say this from the outside, but it, as a general principle, when you can divide labor, you often get a lot of gains from that. And it, you know, if you try to imagine what it's like to be a president of baseball operations that's also the GM and also has a hand in all of the different departments, I mean, how many hours of the day do you actually have that are usable? You know, even if you only sleep 4 hours a day, that's 20 hours a day to operate all those departments. At some point, it just becomes a computing problem. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how brilliant you are. You can't compute, you know, for every department what the right strategy is. At some point, proper delegation is needed. And certainly assigning a GM, that would definitely be a big part of delegation. There's every reason to think that might actually increase AJ's efficiency as a president if he hires the right person to delegate a lot of responsibility to. It could definitely begin.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, we're about a year away from, you know, one of the great nights in San Diego sports. Dallas and Travis, you were at the game where we clinched against the Dodgers. Were you there, Dylan? Are you in San Diego or? No,
I was there for that. I split time in San Diego. I was there for that, though. Okay. First baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So were we.
Hey, so were we.
Hey, I was
fourth row up, baby.
Oh, it was nice. I think it was section 109, if I recall correctly.
And what do you guys remember from that night? You know, Blink 182 starts playing, and
that it felt better than this night.
Yeah. A Wednesday.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, I know. A Wednesday outside of the playoffs.
I mean, the Blink 182 thing was, there are a few moments in San Diego. Like the only moment I can think of in San Diego that's more San Diego than that moment was like if a white guy with long hair like swam up to me on the beach and asked me about guac. Like that's the only that's the only more, San, more Diego San Diego thing I could hear. Yeah, like, or if he did a kickflip and asked me if I wanted a burrito. You know what I mean? Like that's the only more San Diego thing that could have happened. It was just like, but up to that, I mean,
the rain was wild. I remember looking up in the black sky with the lights and seeing the rain fall. It was that. That's what I remember. With the
Dylan,
crowd.
Do you remember? Yeah. Though, like from, I think after the second inning, it was boring as shit. Like we were getting like one hit, right? I think it was like, and we couldn't. It was just, we were like, we're done. We can't, there's nothing that we can do.
Yeah. It was so tense. It was boring in a way, but it was also tense. And I remember at one point I just got up from my seat and started walking in the hallways. I think that must have been in like the fourth inning or something. Because the magic from the previous two games, that was still pretty fresh, but those first innings reminded you like just how fragile that was. And that we were still playing. You know, we wrote this, but there's a lot of indicators that might have been the best team of all time, at least in regular season. Their run differential was insane. Their lineup was insane. They had been so successful that year. And it felt like in those first innings that they were reminding us of that the last two games were just a fluke. So I remember that that weight, that tension, and just feeling like you can't help but think about, well, what if we lose this game?
Yeah.
And we're one game away from elimination.
Well, the crazy thing about that game, not the crazy thing, I think my favorite part about that game was the thing that ruined it for them was Dave Roberts. Like his dumb bullpen decisions come back to haunt him. I mean, it was Anderson, right? Who was pitching? And we couldn't
do anything. We're talking about like, why did you take him out?
Yeah. Like, why did you take him out? We couldn't do anything against
him.
We
couldn't touch him.
Yes.
He was shoving.
And then he just takes him out. I think he only had like 75 pitches. I mean, he was efficient. We were doing nothing. And good old Dave Roberts comes back to save the day for San Diego. And then he took him out. Everything changed. And I mean, it didn't, I think at that point, even if we did lose that game, I would have been heartbroken, but like that inning with the rain and coming back and watching
how scrappy it was. It was not, there weren't clean hits. It wasn't like they were raking
dirty.
Dirty baseball. Crone
shortened up with two strikes, and he just punched it into center field. He wasn't trying to go yard. He just didn't want to be the guy that struck out in that moment, and that was beautiful to see.
Talk about forgotten this season is Cronenworth. Bad luck, broken hand. No one's talked about him, and he was a big part of his team, supposedly.
There's good reason no one's talked about him.
Again, the bad luck and the drop off in performance and all of it.
I remember at the beginning of this season going on Ben and Woods. I think we were like a month into the season or something like that. And, you know, the team was already underperforming. I was skeptical. I'm like, this doesn't feel right, guys. This doesn't feel right. And like Ben's like, no. Like this is, hey, you know, this is, oh, sorry, I'll do a better Ben. This is what they do every year, Dallas. Jay Cronenworth. This is where he was at last year. Look at the numbers. And he was right. I mean, Jake Cronenworth was almost exactly in the same position he was at that time. And so I gave it the benefit of the doubt, but man, like it just, I feel like for 2 months after that, people were still going, it's early. Hey, it's early. And it's like, it's fucking August. It's not early. Sorry. I dropped an F-bomb, Nick. I know you don't appreciate
that. Oh, I don't care. That's fine. Thanks. We don't have sponsors.
Hey. That's true. We don't. the Cronenworth thing to me is one of the more depressing situations for the season, and there's some bad luck in there too, but for the most part it's a lot of just underperforming and seemingly for no real reason. He just didn't play well. Then he got hurt.
We're going to get out of here in a few minutes, but I wanted to promote your Substack again, the Letters to AJ Substack. It's a great read. Everybody should subscribe to that. Dallas, I want to ask you if Dylan here is correct on this. He had an article called The Article of Faith. In the first paragraph, I'll read it to you. Okay. Do you agree with this? In the 2023 Padres are not easy to categorize. They are unique. They are not bad. They're very good at certain things. No one would say they're the best in their industry, but they keep hanging around. Maybe they're the fallout boy of Major League Baseball. Do you agree with that?
Man, that's a pretty
they're
great
good, comp. But they have a song. They have a song.
That's a pretty great comp. Yeah.
They can certainly sell out an arena.
They can. Yeah. No, that's a pretty good comp. 2023. Yeah.
If 2023 is Desiree's comp, she insisted that that's the closest comp, and I think I agree.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty
good. Excellent. That's pretty good.
That's good. I think that's right. Well, yeah, subscribe to the Substack. And Dylan, hey, thanks for coming on. Maybe we'll check in with you later sometime next year or something. But yeah.
Sure thing. Hopefully in greener pastures.
Yes. Yeah. Shout out to blogs, man. We got Dallas. Post that.
It's going to take me another week to write it, but I will get it out.
I have an empty Word document with the title, That's What's In. And I don't have it. I don't have a line yet. Look for it.
Maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe, Nick, we need to redo That's What's In.
Yeah.
And well, we just gotta wrap. Film it. We gotta wrap.
We have to wrap. I have bars. You have bars. We all need right. to do it.
This makes sense to me. I'm going to make this happen.
Is this the wrap to uncurse the other
we'll drop
rap?
The SoundCloud. We'll drop the SoundCloud underneath.
The group underneath of people will get podcast. In. We'll get Todd Gloria. We'll get the chicken.
Yeah.
We'll get like people in San Diego who people
it has
care
to air
about.
On KUSI, correct? Isn't that where it has to air on?
Yeah.
To reverse the curse?
I might have a problem.
Maybe we don't want to do it on KUSI. Yeah.
they're the ones that gave the curse.
That's true.
The airtime. So I think you have to go on there to reverse the curse.
We'll work it out after the show. We'll talk to
I'm getting in the weeds already.
Shout out to Bobby.
Gotta get done.
Yeah, shout out. Yeah, Bobby Cressy.
Bobby Cressy's in it. Bobby Cressy is in that rap.
All right. Well, we'll check in, I guess, later this off season. See what they do. I mean, I don't know if anything really will come down during the actual postseason, but we'll be watching because this team is endlessly fascinating, and it sounds like we're bringing the band back next year. So it's going to be something to watch to see how this plays out.
Something to watch.
Something to watch.
Yeah. You could follow us at the Kept Faith at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, maybe Blue Sky coming. Who knows?
Yeah. Threads. Get on it.
I don't know. I haven't done it yet, but we're working on that. So keep the faith. Thanks for coming on, Dylan.
Go Padres.